passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch.
Everyone, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer here, another Baseball America playoff podcast presented by MyBookie. Another crazy day. Probably, I don't know if you can say it was the most interesting day of the playoffs so far, but if you want to make that argument, especially with the way it ended, I'm not going to push back against you too hard, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Kyle. Was that the most entertaining day of the playoffs so far?
I think so. The way it finished with the Padres and the Dodgers and just the tense aspects of all that, really the final three innings of that game, you add the Rays and the Yankees and the Rays just kind of taking it to them. The A's come back against the Astros and Ian Anderson shoving. Excuse me. I think this was the most entertaining day so far, and there's more to come. This has been a very, very interesting postseason so far. Obviously, we've had more games than we normally have to this point. And I'm looking forward to see what today holds, because you got four teams playing for their season today. And, you know, we always see teams really come out hot when it's time to do that.
It's funny. So we talk about it at my house. You know, I have a child, a daughter who seems to like drama. And we always joke about, where did she get that from? Because we're not a very dramatic family. But as I was watching the Padres-Dodgers game, I realize there is a part of me that kind of likes drama. I like the fact that Brusdar Gratterall reacted that way after watching Cody Bellinger make an amazing game-saving catch. You know, throw basically, if you'd have ended up shirtless at the end of that, it would have been the only step further to go. And to be honest, I love the fact that Manny Machado chirped back at him. I don't really know why, because it wasn't that he was doing it at the Padres. He was doing it basically like his celebration of, whoo, I was saved. But I like that too. I like the fact, I don't want these two teams to really like each other. I like the fact that these two teams who have been battling all year, you have the established Dodgers, you have the upstart Padres, and you have the two teams kind of like getting chippy and not liking each other. Sign me up. Give me that drama. That is nothing detracted from that game from that. That to me added to it.
I wrote about this and talked about it on our pre-playoff podcast. These two teams do not like each other. Obviously, everything with the Rays and Yankees, and I've got a whole damn stable of guys that throw 98, got most of the attention, but I've been covering a lot of games this series. I've written about this rivalry a lot. This has been building. There's been a lot of little moments. There hasn't been a singular big moment, but whether it's guys getting run over at the plate, whether it's bat flips and stare downs, whether it's, you know, guys getting hit on purpose, this has been building all year. And we kind of saw that, you know, kind of go to the next level last night. First and foremost, Cody Bellinger, great players making great plays in the postseason. That's what playoff baseball is about. Again, Fernando Tatis did everything right. He squared up a baseball. He hit the hell out of it. And Cody Bellinger robbed him. And that's just an incredible play. And you give Bellinger all the credit in the world. The Dodgers, in terms of their celebration, I mean, I get it. Manny Machado had a very, very, very emphatic bat throw. That wasn't a flip. That was a throw. Screaming, you know, to his dugout, trying to get him pumped up. I understand that. That's what the Padres have done most of the year. But if you're going to do that, you got to be cool with the Dodgers also going a little over the top in their celebrations. And that's the thing here. There's, as we've seen, the celebrations kind of escalate a little bit, hitters and pitchers, as the quote unquote unwritten rules are being broken. If you're going to do something, you got to be cool with the other side doing that. Now, this is a very, very passionate series. Again, these two teams do not like each other. You have some long-term implications here. You have short-term implications here. But I thought it added to the series for sure, but I want to make sure it doesn't overshadow the great play on the field. And, you know, Cody Bellinger doing what he did, he's had a rough year, but, you know, for him to make that play in that moment shows you this is still one of the best, most impactful players in baseball who can do some incredible things.
And then we get to the ninth, and the game, it wasn't just on the line. The game remained on the line for quite a while there. Obviously, the Dodgers pull through. Kenley Jansen hands off to Joe Kelly, and the Dodgers pull through, which puts the – which puts the Dodgers in not just an enviable position, but I don't see – now they're going to do it. And if they do, I will tip my cap. It'll be Red Sox coming back against the Yankees, you know, that basically started the Red Sox run. It would be that level if – if the Padres come back from this, I know it's a best of five, not a best of seven, but considering the state of their pitching staff, starting pitching especially, all of that, they needed this to be 1-1 to have a chance. They didn't get that. It's down. They're down 2-0. But with that, like, I also think that the Dodgers came out of that yesterday a little bit kind of wounded by that as far as the totality of their playoffs as well, because – they had to go get their closer and pull him out of a game. A three-run lead is something that, you know, that you should be able to hold.
I wrote about this last year. We saw it a little bit in the playoffs, their resistance to going to Kenley Jansen in game five of the NLDS, and we've seen it now again here. This is not the same Kenley Jansen. The Dodgers know that. They've been trying to see if he can get it back, and he's shown it to you in spurts. But look, the short version is you cannot trust him in the postseason right now to close out a victory for you. He is just not the pitcher he once was. And that puts the Dodgers in a tough spot. We saw last night when he was in the zone, he was hittable. They go get him. Joe Kelly comes out. Kelly hadn't pitched in 9 days, and he immediately walked two guys. Now, give Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado credit. They had some great takes in that at-bat. Joe Kelly threw some good breaking balls down that they held up on. So now if you're the Dodgers, you got to look around and say, who do we trust? If we have a lead in the ninth inning, who do we feel best about giving the ball to? There's not a clear answer. Kenley Jansen is not option A right now. Joe Kelly has had his struggles. We saw last year in game five of the NLDS. And again, last night he got out of it, but walking the first two batters you face is not great. Although again, having not pitched in 9 days, that's a tough spot for him. You know, Brewster Graterol has this big stuff, but he does not miss bats. He has not missed bats all year. I mean, to be honest, the Dodgers' best reliever right now is Victor Gonzalez, but he's also a 24-year-old rookie who's never pitched the ninth inning in his career. And yes, pitching in the ninth is very different than pitching in the sixth, seventh, and eighth. So they don't have a great option. We've talked about the Dodgers are the best team in baseball this year. They should win this World Series. They have five legit starters. They have a 1-9 lineup. They have full health. They are in better position than any other team in Major League Baseball right now. But the bullpen has been their Achilles heel at times. They have at times made moves to address it, but they've never gone out and gotten the big closer who can make a difference for them. And that could be what causes them to pay a price. I don't think it will be this series. The Padres, again, just with the pitching staff, the way it is, Clevinger and Lamet not being healthy, it just makes it tough for them to come back. It makes it tough for them to have won this series in the first place. But you get in against the Braves and all of a sudden that offense is coming to the plate in a close game in the ninth, and they're, you know, they have Freed and Anderson, or you get to the World Series, and whether it's the Rays, the Yankees, the Astros, the A's, you don't feel great about any of your options on the mound in the ninth inning in a close game. And the Dodgers are going to have to figure this out, whether it means getting Joe Kelly more regular work, whether it means moving Victor Gonzalez into some ninth inning spots to see how he handles it. They've got to figure it out, because it's been clear for well over a year now, but we just keep seeing that as much as Kenley Jansen is a great pitcher who's had a great career, he's at the point in his career now where you just can't trust it in the ninth inning of a tight game.
And we'll be interested to see, you know, what they do, because it kind of felt like that yesterday was yet another sign that at the minimum, this is going to be bullpen closer by committee, which the reality of it is that he came into that situation. There is times where I am absolutely on board with, you don't always need to use your best reliever in the ninth inning. He came in, you know, that ninth inning of that game had a chance to be one of the easier positions that the Dodgers were in all night. You know, thanks to the two runs in the bottom of the seventh, they came into the ninth with the big lead. You know, it's something where we'll be interested to see. And now, Padres here, they've managed. That was a very gutsy performance, and give Zach Davies credit. I mean, he battled. He really wasn't. He left that game in. They were still absolutely positively in that game when he left, and soon thereafter they got even closer, because they did get to Kershaw a little bit in the sixth. But I what are your chances of them still pulling out this series?
I mean, never say never. Again, this is a really good offense. We saw them come back last night, you know, keep themselves in the game. It's just tough. The Dodgers haven't announced their Game 3 starter yet. But again, you look now at the rest of the series, the Dodgers are probably going to have the edge on the mound, assuming, again, they don't outsmart themselves and try and be fancy when they don't have to be. They should put Tony Gonsolin on the mound in Game 3. You know, Games 4 and 5, they can do whatever mix of May and Urias they want. And then if they want to go to Buehler on short rest, they can. Now, May came out of the bullpen in Game 1. Maybe he goes Game 5. Urias goes Game 4. They have a couple things they can do, as long as, again, they don't get fancy and, you know, have Gratterall pitch the first as an opener and then throw Adam Kolarik in and then try and bring one of those guys in. Like, you have the studs. Let them go out and do their thing. This is, we talked about it beforehand, even if Clevinger and Lamet were fully healthy, the Dodgers were going to be the favorite to win the series. They're the best team in baseball. With those two out, the odds just increased that much more. This should be a Dodgers series win, whether that's a sweep today or a Game 4 tomorrow, you know, we'll see. But never say never. The Padres got 5 innings from Davies yesterday, which they absolutely had to get. Credit to him. And now Adrian Morejon going today, it's going to be kind of a bullpen-ish day. Morejon typically goes, you know, 2 tops, you know, maybe you can get 3 out of them, but the Dodgers, again, they're sitting pretty here. Again, we just have to see if they can close the game out. Again, we go back to Jansen real quick. His cutters last night that got hit, I mean, his cutters were 88, 89, 90. This guy who used to throw 96, 97. This is a decline in stuff that's just remarable. So, well, again, if Padres get into that bullpen and he pitches again, yeah, they have a shot. But just the way it lines up right now, this is still the Dodgers series.
And the thing I would say with that for Jansen is that this is a decline, but this is a guy, I do think that there is a price to be paid. The Dodgers are always in the postseason. Always. Kenley Jansen in the last 8 years has effectively pitched another season on top of the regular seasons he's pitched because of the postseason. 51.2 postseason innings over the last, you know, 8 years, including that what he's done so far this year, 44 games. That's a pretty, you know, it's he already carries a reasonably heavy workload during the regular season for a reliever. And then, you know, I think what we are seeing is the wear and tear. Some Mariano Rivera's, the Mariano Rivera's of the world are the exceptions, not the rules. Kenley Jansen's 33. His stuff just not as good as it used to be. And that's been somewhat true for a couple of years now. And, you know, as you said, like it's something where when you're throwing those mid 90s, you know, when you're throwing the mid 90s, it's different than when you're, he is a veteran pitcher getting by on guile and a little bit of everything else, you know, location, but it's smarts now, not stuff. And that's tough to do.
Talk about this a little bit, that, you know, not having fans in the stands, it really affects closers this year. It's been a tough, tough year for a lot of these guys just because they feed off that adrenaline. And he's also had some health problems. And again, he's had a great career, but you know, if the Padres get back in this series, I mean, that's going to be the way they do it. We saw that a little bit last night where they jumped on the bullpen, and that would be the formula for getting back in the series, because the Dodgers are going to have the starting pitching edge pretty much every night out. That was true in game one as soon as Clevinger went down, and that's going to be true the rest of the series. So if the Padres are going to do it, that's how they're going to do it.
Before we jump into the second game of the night, we do have a quick message. It's fall, and at my bookie, that can mean only one thing. It's winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. At my bookie, winning season is all about your chance to win big. You can bet the Major League Baseball playoffs. You can bet the NBA playoffs, UFC, NFL, college football. The craziest sports fall of your lifetime is here. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your intuition. Select from hundreds of futures bets where you can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code BASEBALLAMERICA. That's one word, BASEBALLAMERICA, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie. And we're back. The game that was going on as the Dodgers-Padres game was getting rolling, Yankees-Rays, we had the pitcher that I feel like every Yankees fan wanted to see on the mound in game two, especially after what happened in game two. Here goes Masahiro Tanaka, playoff hero. And the result ended up being much of what it was in game two. The two-headed Devi Garcia J. Happ outing allowed five runs. Rays go on to win. Masahiro Tanaka comes out. Randy Arozarena is still so hot that you kind of have to avert your eyes as you watch him, because it really, it's like staring into like a fire from like 2 feet away. You know, it's like, okay, it feels a little warm. But Tanaka allows five runs and the Rays win again. Here we are. The Rays are up two, you know, they have a 2-1 lead. Does not mean this series is over by any means. However, it does mean that the Yankees have now used, they had two starters, so I would say they viewed as kind of a notch above the rest of their rotation. They've used both of them and they're behind in the series, with Jordan Montgomery being asked to carry a very heavy load.
So I think the first thing we have to address about this series, and I've been covering all games of this series, it was their last three games. I'm going to be out there again, game four tonight. A lot of the focus has been on what the Yankees have done wrong. And we can talk about this later. I know you spoke about it with Josh on yesterday's podcast, and you and I, as usual, have opposite feelings about this. But I don't think enough credit has been given to what the Rays have done right. Let's just be very, very frank here. The Rays are the better team. I'm a big believer in you are what your record is. The Rays had the best record in the American League this year. They ran away with the East. And yes, the Yankees had some injuries. Guess what? The Rays had a lot of injuries too. The Rays have come out and beat up whoever the Yankees have put on the mound the last two games. Starters, relievers, openers, traditional starters, doesn't matter. They're getting big hits from the numbers 8 and 9 hitters. Kevin Kiermaier and Michael Perez yesterday had home runs, as well as Kiermaier had an RBI double, and Perez opened the scoring with an RBI single on a scorched liner that just went over LeMahieu's glove at second. I mean, the Rays are getting contributions 1 through 9 in their lineup. Their pitching staff, they set the postseason strikeout record for a 9-inning game in game two. And yesterday they came out and Charlie Morton, you know, pitched well, got out of a bit of a jam in the third, but on the whole, kept the damage to the minimum. And then the bullpen came in and shut the Yankees down for the most part, aside from Giancarlo Stanton hitting another mammoth home run. The Rays are playing really, really well right now. And I think it's important to give them credit. It's not just about what the Yankees have done wrong. It's what the Rays have done right. And again, this was the best team in the American League this year. They beat the Yankees 8 out of 10 times. This is the better team because, again, you are what your record is. And for all the Yankees injuries, the Rays had a bunch themselves. So I think that's first and foremost. And look, now the Yankees have to respond. Jordan Montgomery has not been great this season. And this is why, for me, I definitely preferred, hey, go Cole, Tanaka. You can use Happ in game 3, Garcia in game 4, Montgomery maybe. You know, you don't have to start. You can go to Cole on short rest in game 5. I like the way the rotation lines up more in that sense that way. But what's done is done, and now they got to perform. I mean, we talk about strategy all the time. At the end of the day, the players got to play. And right now the Rays players are outplaying the Yankees players, at least the last two nights.
I know that I am on an island. I'm in one of those islands in the South Atlantic that, you know, they have to send boats to once a month because it's too far for helicopters to fly to it. I get it that I'm here in a very small world. You're going to have to pitch J Happ in this series. That's mm-hmm. the reason that you have, you know, and by the way, I know he wasn't very good in game 2. However, he was absolutely one of the Yankees' 4 best starters. If you're pushing it 5, you could argue he was their third, fourth, or fifth best starter. The difference between Devin Garcia, Jordan Montgomery, J Happ during the season, not all that much. You expect he's going to pitch.
It's actually pretty significantly. Happ was their third best starter by a pretty wide margin. I mean, he had a
I would disagree with that because his ERA was better, but his FIP was worse than those guys. And Devin Garcia and Jordan Montgomery did go a little deeper sometimes in games. Like, so I think it's debatable, but you know, it is absolutely, especially Jordan Montgomery, if I remember right. Jordan Montgomery, I think 3 of his last 4 starts went 7. But I have to look that up now because maybe my data is wrong on that. But whatever it is, he was going to pitch in this series. And I think too much is being made by Yankees fans about, oh, it'd have been different for Tanaka if he'd have pitched game 2. He would have been facing Glasnow instead of Morton. I don't know how different, like, the reality of it is like you said, I think you rightfully said it, which it is, the reality beyond everything else is, I just think this Rays team may be better than the Yankees. They were better over the course of the season. This is a Rays team that won 96 last year that, you know, they have a bullpen. If you said which team, we were just talking about Kenley Jansen and like, okay, who's going to close for the Dodgers? The Rays don't have that problem because the Rays have like 7 guys that they feel, maybe 8 that they feel comfortable pitching the 9th. You know, and by the way, the one of them who's already got a save in the postseason, the one who never got a save during the regular season. It is all about matchups. It's all about different looks. And that's really tough if you're the Yankees. And, you know, again, this series is by no means over. It would not surprise Giancarlo Stanton. Like I said, Randy Arozarena is glowing red hot. So is Giancarlo Stanton, who is also making his presence well known in this series. But that said, 2 of the best teams, whoever wins this series, I do believe will be the favorite in the ALCS against the A's or the Astros. And this is, you know, a heavyweight bout. If we go back to, I'm going old school, like, you know, back when those mattered in the 40s, 50s and 60s, but it's a heavyweight bout. Both teams are landing plenty of blows, but so far the Rays have just been a little bit better.
Yeah. So just to kind of go back real quick, Montgomery had actually struggled toward the end of the year. He did not pitch, you know, particularly well in September, whereas Happ had actually been really, 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 really good. Happ had 2 bad starts to open the year. His final 7 starts, he had a 2.34 ERA. He actually had a really good year. And it goes back to buy-in. It was very, very, very clear. J Happ did not love this arrangement, was not bought in. And we can talk strategy all we want. But as Tyler Kepner in the New York Times pointed out, you know, Chaim Bloom said it back in 2018 when he was with the Rays, the players have to be bought in on it. And it's very, very clear the Yankees players were not, because they're doing something unfamiliar they don't like. And As soon as that's clear, the front office needs to scrap it. If the players are not bought in, it's not going to work. This game is played by human beings, not robots. And for me, that's where the mistake is. You got to know your clubhouse. You got to know your players. You can present them with this plan, and if they say no, you got to scrap it. And right now, with the way Hap had pitched this season compared to, again, Garcia had not looked great down the stretch. Jordan Montgomery really did not.
Yeah, you're right. I apologize on that. I have my data wrong there. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I go back to put your best pitchers out there, let them do what they do best. And for the Yankees, that meant Cole 1, Tanaka 2, Hap 3, Garcia 4. Maybe you can, you know, piggyback him with Montgomery if you want to play the matchup game and go back to Cole game 5. So, again, it might not have mattered. The Rays, again, as we've talked about, they're the better team, but it just goes back to me putting your players in the best position to succeed. And if you're doing something they're not bought in on, you're not doing that. And I just think we needed to see a little more feel in that regard from the Yankees with front office and the coaching staff in regards to, hey, let's talk to our players. Let's gauge how they feel about this. And if they're not good with it, we need to scrap.
By the way, I'm also going to push back on Jay Happ if he's not good with it. Jay Happ, basically, this, I get it. Players, you know, like to think of themselves in their rosiest scenario. This is the role that he had last year for, you know, for them in the playoffs. It is absolutely true that if the Rays had started Jay Happ in that game, and after two to three innings, pulled him because he'd given up 4 runs. And then they brought in Devi Garcia, and Devi Garcia battled through an inning where he allowed, you know, a home run, 27 pitches in an inning. And then they had turned it to the bullpen at that point because they were down 5, you know what, you know, they had given up 5 runs. Everyone would look at this and say, Jay Happ didn't pitch well. The Yankees did him a favor, I would say, in some ways. I agree with you. I follow what you're saying about they didn't get buy-in. But the Yankees kind of did him a favor in some ways, because instead of the focus being on the fact that Jay Happ did not pitch well, the focus instead is, the Yankees put Jay Happ in a position where he didn't succeed, where I kind of feel like that the exact same thing may have happened, you know, in the exact opposite version. And because Devi Garcia is the rookie, everyone then would have said, they went with the tag team of Happ and Garcia, and then they're gave 4 to Montgomery, you know, or they'd have done this in game 3, which would have been they would have been down. They'd still be in the same result, I think. I don't think Masahiro Tanaka suffered significantly because he got an extra day of rest, which has generally worked out well for him. Yeah. I just think Rays are really good, and we'll see where this goes from here.
And again, that is something that, as we just dove into that debate, again, we can't lose sight of that. The Rays are a really, really good team. They are capable of beating up on anyone they play. Again, they have the best record in the American League this year. I can't emphasize this enough. They beat the Yankees 8 out of 10 times. They had a bunch of injuries as well. I keep repeating because I think the point needs to be driven home. I think there's been a little bit of a sense of, the Yankees, you know, they should be winning this series. Well, no, you can do everything right and on the up and up and still lose. And again, the Rays are the better team. Let's be clear about that. They showed that over the course of the season. But the Yankees are still in this. It's 2-1. The Rays, because they have 3 really good starters, but then the 4th spot, you can argue, gets a little dicey, although I would argue Ryan Yarbrough has pitched really, really well this year. They're going with an opener situation today, but again, they're more comfortable with it. Their players are bought in on it. They've done this before. They didn't do it much this year, but over the course of the last few years, they've done a decent amount. So that's where it's different when the Rays do it versus the Yankees do. It's that player comfort, that player familiarity. It's the player buy-in. And we'll see. The Yankees, again, Giancarlo Stanton is white hot right now. They absolutely have the bats to get back in this series. They can get in and win this, especially if they get to game 5 and Gerrit Cole gets to start again. So they're not dead. Let's be clear here. Let's not bury them yet. But the Rays are in a good position right now, and we'll see if they can finish it off tonight.
And that's the thing I'll say for the Rays. You mentioned they haven't used it as much this year. The reason they haven't used it as much this year is their starting rotation, which the opener for them was something created when they started doing it, out of necessity because they had a very thin rotation. They had injuries, you know, and they looked around and said, what is the best way for us to win games? And they said, we don't feel like with it. Bringing up a guy who effectively is our number seven, number eight starter in the organization and asking that player to get 15 to 20 outs is probably not our best approach. So they went to that. This year, I'm just saying this because I give credit to the Rays on this. I think this is something that teams should always do, which is how do we figure out ways? You can argue that this is me arguing against myself here, but how do I put ourselves in position where our players can best succeed? Now that they have added Tyler Glasnow to Charlie Morton, to Blake Snell, they have managed to put themselves in a position where it's like, you know what, we have starters. Although in Blake Snell's case, they're like, you know what, we think that Blake Snell is great at getting 15, 18, maybe 20 outs. But they basically all year said, Blake Snell's not a guy who we want. He's not going to get 24 outs for us. They don't think that that was his best way. They do a really good job of that. You look at their outfield, their lineup, it's like they do game in, game out. It's like, how do we put guys in situations where they can succeed? And I give them credit for that, that I can't even – sometimes I know that they're platooning in this game somehow, but it's so complicated how they're platooning that if you're on the outside and you don't have the information they have, you may not be able to easily figure out how they're platooning it that day.
Again, the depth that they've built is just super impressive. That's 60 different lineups in 60 days. They've plugged in a bunch of guys who have, you know, been effective. They haven't, you know, really suffered a whole lot from all the injuries they have this year. Some guys slumping this year, you know, Randy Arozarena, who I have the big article up today on baseballamerica.com. I mean, he was a call up in August. He was not someone that they plan to have be a key part of their team on opening day this year. And now he's the hottest hitter in the postseason after a really hot stint to finish the year. They've built up a tremendous amount of talent in this organization that's allowed them to mix and match. And that's a credit to them. You know, and again, just to kind of finish on this point, one of the things that I've talked about a lot and that got lost in the whole, oh, look what the Rays are doing in the opener. Let's see if we should do it too. The Rays did that when they had no other options, when their pitching staff got decimated, as you pointed out. As soon as they, through trades and just health, had healthy starters, they let them pitch. Again, Snell, Morton, Glasnow, you know, Ryan Yarbrough this year, he only did this once. Every other game was a typical start for him. Hey, you know, five, six, pitch into the seventh inning. They only did this with him once this year in 11 outings. 10 of his 11 starts were just normal, regular starts. So, and that's partially why I would have preferred to see them just stick with that. You know, it's what Yarbrough's done and been good at all year, but I understand why they're going with it, and we'll see how it works out tonight.
So let me, one thing before we jump on to other games that I want to get your thoughts on this. I think we agree on this. We agree on some things, we disagree on, but I think we agree on this. And I'm trying to work up a story for the site about this. And I struggle with coming up with the answer for how you can do it. That said, I don't ever want to go back to having off days in a best of five division series. I love the way that this has brought back. This makes this best of five division series much more like the regular season. I love the fact that you have seen starting pitchers in some of these games be in a situation where if this was, we're going to play two, we're going to have an off day, we're going to play, you know, if this was something where the off days were there, teams probably would have pulled the guy. But because they know in the back of their head, we're really going to tax our bullpen this week, they haven't. The fact that we're in a situation where we're saying, okay, you're going to have to use your number four starter in this series if you go, he goes four. You don't have a choice. I love that. Now, getting there in a normal season where we're not playing at neutral sites is very difficult, but I don't want to see this go away. This is the change of all the changes. This is the change I've most enjoyed.
There's no question that it's much more like real baseball, playing five games in 5 days. You know, I think back to the 2009 ALCS between the Angels and Yankees, and I remember this specifically because Mike Socha talked about it. Games 4, 5, and 6, they played 3 games in 6 days to finish that series out. And again, it's not really the rhythm of a baseball season. Now, travel's a part of that. And that's where it's going to be really difficult to play 5 and 5 days, 7 and 7 days once we get back to normal, because you have to have a travel day in there. And I'm covering playoff games in empty ballparks. And let me be clear, this is awful. Let's never do this again. This is weird. It's eerie. It's dead. It's just very, very strange and not good for anyone. So if I had to trade, okay, 5 games in 5 days for having fans back in the stands and playing in your home parks, and you can't do it because you have to have a travel day, I'll take that trade every single day. But in general, yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for this more resembles the rhythms of an actual baseball season. And it puts the onus on teams to, yeah, get something from your starting pitchers, have them go deep into games. And I think that's good for the game as a whole.
The tricky part is trying to figure out how you could possibly do this. But I don't like us playing a regular season one way, and then we get to the postseason and it's like, by the way, now there's enough off days that you can, if you have 3 or 4 good relievers, you can just use them in every game, and you can pull your starters after 4. I would love the idea that teams would go into the trade deadline thinking, you know what, if we can find a number 4 starter who we actually feel comfortable starting in a playoff game, that's very important for us because we know we're going to probably have to use that guy. I would love that. Now, the one thing I was going to say is this. Now, the Braves are, to segue this kind of to another game, the Braves are right now so far basically like, who needs 4, you know, as long as we've got Fried and Anderson, we could win these series maybe without ever seeing, even having to ever announce who a number 4 starter is. But overall, I do like the idea.
Again, I do too. It's just, what is that at the expense of? And being in these stadiums, you know, I've definitely had the thought, you know, watching the Yankees and the Rays playing an empty Petco Park while the streets around the park are dead and empty. This is just weird. This is just, it's not great for anyone. I mean, it's cool they're here. I'm very fortunate to be in the ballpark. I'm enjoying covering the series. I'm enjoying watching these incredibly talented players play. But baseball is a game meant to be enjoyed by the masses. And the fact that
I agree. I'm not saying that way. I'm saying my proposal is going to be, you know what? We're trying to figure out ways that we make the postseason, the regular season, still matter. One of the ways to do that is, congratulations, you're the top seed. You get all 5 games. Like, that would be a way you could do it. And that would be something where you're saying you're still in it, but you know what? You don't get to have a home game in this series. Get to the CS. We're talking about a different thing, but one of the ways you could do this is say the reward for winning 94 rather than 88 is you get to play every game of that series at home. It would be a little unconventional, but it doesn't alter it puts more weight on the regular season, which is one of the things I worry that we're losing if all this.
I say anything they can do where they do that and are still able to have playoff games played in home parks, I'm all for it. I just think it's important to ensure that games are played in regular home parks and not neutral sites, just to make it 5 games in 5 days. I think the home park priority comes first.
But, well, we'll get back to Braves Marlins, but we did want to get, we're going to kind of work our way backwards here. The A's stay alive. The A's just basically cranking homer after homer. It was solos for a long while, but then they did figure out, hey, we can also hit home runs with runners on base, which is even better. And so the A's stay alive. That series is now 2-1. We don't know, but it looks unlikely that Zach Greinke is going to be able to pitch in this series. I mean, again, there's no structural damage, but the post announcement of there's no structural damage for Zach Greinke was it seemed like the hope was that he would be able to pitch in the ALCS if the Astros get there. Do the A's still have a shot in this thing? It's now 2-1. Or you look at this Astros lineup, you look at the fact that this is a team that's done this so many times, I'm still thinking the Astros pull this one out.
I mean, the A's have a shot. They really do. That was a huge win for them yesterday. I mean, Liam Hendricks, can we talk about that guy? three innings, one hit after he's been, you know, exposed to some big workloads this entire postseason. I mean, wow. That was awesome. That was really, really something special. And yes, he was absolutely helped by the shadows, but still, this guy has come out and performed. And I think it's just been really, really impressive to watch. The biggest thing for me in this series that's jumped out, and you had asked me on our pre-playoff podcast what factors these neutral sites would have. And I mentioned Dodger Stadium and Petco Park. You know, they're both pitchers' parks, especially at night. In the fall, ball doesn't really carry. Well, we've seen at Dodger Stadium 18 home runs in three games, which is a record. Two big things with that. The fact they've played this entire series as day games is a huge, huge, huge component. The ball does fly during the day. It's at night when the temperature's cool. Things really, really, really start to slow down. We saw Will Smith's long drive in game five of the NLDS last year is a really good example of that. He thought it was a home run off the bat. It fell short of the wall. That's what happens at Dodger Stadium at night. And the other thing is it's been unseasonably hot here in Southern California. We've been having, you know, days in the upper 80s, mid 90s here, end of September, early October, which is unusual. So the balls here travel very, very, very differently at noon when it's 95 than at 7:30 when it's 78. And we've seen that. The fact that every game of this series has been played during the day is a huge, huge, huge reason why we're seeing the ball fly the way it is. I mean, there's been a couple balls you see the pitchers go, what the heck, how did that get out? So with that, and you add two very powerful offenses, we're seeing a home run explosion. I expect nothing less. Again, these are still day games. It's still very warm here. It's cooled off a little bit the last few days, but it's still been a bit warmer than normal. This is going to be a slugfest. And we saw the Astros, you know, when they don't get the starts they need from their starters and they can't tandem start them a little bit, their pure bullpen is vulnerable. And that's why, to me, the A's still have a shot. The ball's going to keep flying. The Astros' arms, we're starting to maybe see them fall off a little bit. To me, that gives the A's a shot still.
I got to ask you. When Fitzy was still at BA, when he was living out west, you know, we always heard about the marine layer, the marine layer. Are we talking about the marine layer? Is that what happens at night, or is that a different thing?
Sometimes. Again, it just generally speaking, you know, cooler air, like it slows down anyway, and these are pitchers' parks. But yeah, the marine layer does absolutely have an effect. Just depends on the time of year, and the weather's gotten weirder and weirder out here. So, yes, there are times that is what is causing some of the effect.
You know, but this is the series that is all about the home runs. This is the postseason, as most postseasons are, that are about home runs. But this is the series that is all about the home runs. And we saw that again yesterday. The ball is flying. Frankie Montas versus I don't remember. Have you seen have the Astros announced a starter yet? I missed it if they have.
They have not officially announced it. It's still listed as TBD on MLB.com. So we have to see what they decide to do. And again, we talked about the Astros. It's going to be interesting to see how they piece these last two games together. Again, they use Christian Javier in game one, and that would have been maybe your natural game four starter. So how they maneuver this, I'm going to be interested to see. The Astros are certainly sitting pretty. They can absolutely win this series, but I don't think the A's are out of it because of where the Astros pitching is, as well as the other factors we cited.
And so that gets us to the finale, which was the first game of the day yesterday. We have Braves Marlins. We have, again, if we talk about the Padres Dodgers is chippy, Braves Marlins is chippy too. And I like chippy in the postseason. Two teams who know each other pretty well and sometimes seem to get a little annoyed with each other. Braves bats have also been kind of one of the stories, but I think the story of yesterday was Ian Anderson, who yet again, as he's done really time and time again since he came up, it's hard to think of a rookie stepping into a more important role than what Ian Anderson has. He arrives to a Braves team that had lost Mike Soroka, and every candidate they had for someone to fill a spot in the rotation besides Max Fried, kept basically bursting into flame, you know, to go Spinal Tap reference here. They didn't have any other starters who they felt comfortable with. They were piecing together Johnny Holstaff over and over and over and over. Ian Anderson shows up, and all of a sudden, snap your fingers, they have two front of the rotation starters. He did that again yesterday. I keep talking about his command. I'm going to keep talking about his command. His ability to mix pitches, but to throw fastballs with purpose. It's not 102 or anything like that. It's firm, but to throw fastballs in the zone, but on the edges of the zone that get strikes, just really stands out to me. He did it again, and the Braves are up 2-0.
Yeah, you know, it's been really, really amazing to watch. And yesterday I saw a couple people mention this. Jason Stark wrote about it a little bit. You know, Ian Anderson reminding people of Steve Avery a little bit and what Avery did in the 1991 postseason. Now, obviously, Anderson's right-handed. Avery was left-handed, but just the poise, the maturity. But I think what Anderson's doing is even more remarkable because Avery was 21 in 1991, but he had pitched in the majors the year before. He had 20 starts the year before that. He'd had big league experience. And that
gotten beat up. He'd right, gone through that portion too. Yeah.
And that 1991 Braves team also had Tom Glavin, Charlie Liebert, John Smoltz. They had a good rotation. Avery had had a year in the majors. This was year two for him. He'd had that experience. Ian Anderson, this is year one, and the Braves needed him in the worst way, as you mentioned. I think that makes what Ian Anderson has done even more impressive than what Steve Avery did in that 1991 postseason so far, just given this is his first run through the majors, and the Braves needed him even more than they needed Avery back then.
I mean, when you say even more, yeah, again, Steve Avery was useful, but you're right. Like, we don't talk about that 1990. Steve Avery was great in the 1991 postseason, but my memory of that for the Braves will be John Smoltz, you know, not Steve Avery. Right now, the Braves are up 2-0, and it is amazing. Kyle Wright will get the start today. This is the first time, because they also went 2-0 in the first round. It's the first time the Braves have even had to dip into their third starter. They don't really have a number four starter right now. I guess it would be Josh Tomlin. But again, if Kyle Wright pitches today as he did in the final 3 weeks of the regular season, it's going to be a tough call for them, because they're facing up against Sixto Sanchez, who's another rookie who's really, really good. But the Braves have a chance to go into the NLCS having not had their clear, glaring weakness exposed in any way, because the deeper they go, their starting pitching falls off a cliff. But if you keep getting not just wins, but shutouts from your number one, number two starter, that doesn't matter nearly as much.
The depth of the Braves' rotation was the question mark. I tweeted out yesterday, their starting pitchers have been great this postseason, and it's all been Fried and Anderson. This is where it's going to get interesting for the Braves. Sixto Sanchez is the better pitcher than Kyle Wright. Braves yes. have the better offense. So I'll be curious to see how today goes, and then potentially tomorrow as well. We have to see what happens. The Braves are in great shape. We talked about before, they should win this series. They have faced two offenses, and not to discredit Fried Anderson, these are really good pitchers regardless. You know, the Reds and Marlins, both of them finished bottom 10 in the majors this year in runs, and a lot of the offensive numbers, you know, OPS, average, et cetera. So they haven't faced the juggernauts yet, and assuming they face the Dodgers in the NLCS, it's going to be very, very, very different. But you can only pitch against who you're out there against. Fried and Anderson have done that and done it brilliantly. You know, Kyle Wright was better toward the end. This is going to be a very telling game for me, just how far the Braves can go. Because if Kyle Wright goes out and gets bombed and then they have to piece it together in game four, that tells me that their NLCS hopes, they're probably going to get, you know, maybe they'll get a game off the Dodgers, maybe two if they're lucky. But if he comes out and dominates and continues on what he did toward the end of last season, that tells me, okay, maybe the Braves do have a shot to get past the Dodgers here. I'm going to be really curious to see what happens today in that context.
The interesting thing with that also will be the Wright faced the Marlins twice this year, and they got him pretty well both times. He was knocked out after three innings, actually knocked out in the fourth on August 21st, three innings two hits, three runs, six walks. And then he also gets knocked out in the fourth. He leaves after four innings in a loss on September 8th. That was kind of the turning point, was really his next start after that. Didn't pitch incredible, but outpitched Max Scherzer as the Braves beat the Nationals on September 13th. Pitched great against the Mets, his best start of the season, 6 1/3, one hit, no runs in his next outing, and pitched well against the Red Sox to finish the season. Yes, I completely agree with you. They need Kyle Wright to be, he doesn't have to be great, but he can't be awful. And he's been awful at times. If he's just they can survive because their bullpen, they will not, if he gets to the fourth or fifth, their bullpen's deep enough. They're not going to give him a lot of rope to see, oh, can he work through this? But he can't give up three in the first, four in the second, things like that, which have happened sometimes with him. He can't have that big inning, which that's been the problem for him. And again, they're facing Sixto Sanchez. I feel pretty confident Sixto Sanchez is not going to give up that big inning, because Sixto Sanchez doesn't really give up a whole lot of big innings.
Again, this is going to be, I think, the most telling game of the postseason for just how real of a World Series contender the Braves are, because if they don't have a number three starter who can pitch well against a bottom 10 offense, they're not truthfully probably a World Series contender.
But it will be fun today. We're going to wrap this one up, you know, because we got to get this up before the game start again today. Another cavalcade of baseball today. It may start tailing off after today. As you said, all four of these games are, if one team wins, it's over. If the other wins, we keep playing. So we could have four games tomorrow, or we could have no baseball. I don't want that. I want at least one of these series has to go on. But anything before we wrap up, Kyle, anything we didn't cover that stands out to you?
I think we covered it. Again, I'm going to be very curious to see how the Rays' decision to go opener today works out. But I'll be still in San Diego covering that series, and I look forward to seeing how it plays out, because it's certainly been very, very, very compelling.
It will be here. I'm very excited to see it as well. So for Kyle, I'm JJ here on the Baseball America Playoff Podcast presented by MyBookie. We'll be back again tomorrow. So long, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.